This is like a blessing to begin the story. And the song goes as follows. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu. Blessed is the omnipresent, blessed is he, blessed is the one who gave the Torah to the people of Israel, blessed is he. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu. I want to take a minute just to tell you a vort, even though I don't believe in them. But here, it's a very important thought. It's a very important message that I think every child has to hear at some point in his life. And you'll have to think whether to incorporate it in the Agada or not. Why is God called HaMakom, the place? So I once heard from Joel Sanders, a real estate agent in the United States. Very nice shot. He said, you come to a place. So one time you approach it from this side. Another time you approach it from that side. Imagine a meadow on top of a mountain. Every time you approach it from a different angle, it seems very different to you. Yet really it's all the same place. The same is true with Hashem. At different stages in life, we view him differently. He doesn't change. We change. We evolve. We grow. And the next line again has a beautiful vort, which I think your children have to hear. And that is, Keneged Arbavanim Dibra Torah. We have the basic pshat. The Torah tells us four times the mitzvah of telling the story of Exodus to our children. The mitzvah is repeated four times in the Torah, and each time the Torah words it differently. So our sages understood, this is to teach us that you can have four different types of kids. You have to be prepared. There's going to be the kid that's going to look at you and say, huh? He doesn't understand too much. You better start the conversation, get him going. Then you have the kid. I told you, one of our kids, right? We used to walk home from school and he'd walk into the poles. Right? I told you this story.
No.
Yeah, one of the kids. We'd walk home from school and he'd be walking near the carriage and there'd be an electric pole there and he'd walk straight into the pole and burst out crying. And we were like, didn't he notice there was a pole there? And obviously not. And I remember one time we're walking home from school and he pulls at my sleeve and he says, Abba, Abba. I said, what happened? He says, there was a pole there and I didn't walk into it. And I'm looking at my wife and I'm thinking, okay, you know, God gives kids with all kinds of different IQs. Fine, you know, we got to love them all. But my nafkamina, you got to love them all. Then the kids started showing us that he has brains in other areas of life. Okay, fine, but I'm saying you never know where your kid's going to be. How much brains or lack thereof a child's going to have. I'm saying, and some understand it's a different stage in life. I'm saying this kid doesn't pull my hand anymore and say, I missed the pole. Okay, so you outgrew that stage. Fine. But sometimes there are children who don't outgrow that stage. You know what? You got to be a parent to every kid. Doesn't matter where a child is. The Torah gives us four terms of how we're going to address our children to teach us four different types of children we could have and four different approaches to the children. So that's the idea of the four sons on this night. But there's another pshat, again, a vort, but with a very important message. That the four children refer to us. They're different parts of who we are. There are different parts of each of us that come to play at different times in life. And a person has to know that regardless of where he is at life, the Torah is relevant to him. The Torah has what to tell him. The four sons, you could call them four stages, you could call them four components in a human soul, and different ones come to play at different times. So, again, these are vorts. They're not the pshat of what's going on here, but the message is still so important, and sometimes you have someone at the table who has to hear that message. The Torah is waiting for you. I'll go off on a slight tangent just for a second. My first class at Machon Meir, I get a phone call from Rav Listman. There's a group of guys here from Bnei Akiva. They're all students from Europe. They all go to secular colleges. They all have non-Jewish girlfriends. And this is their last night at the Machon. They came, they spent 3 weeks touring Israel. And then part of their program was to stop in at Machon Meir. They sort of came in unannounced. And Rav Listman tells me, look, no one's around. And you told us you live next door to the Machon, if you can talk to them. So I'm supposed to talk to these people who are not really affiliated, and this is their only class in Torah here in Israel. And I've never taught at the Machon before. I taught in other places, not here. So I prepared 3 different classes for them. I sat and prepared one, and then I said, that's not good. I prepared a second, I prepared a third. And 5 minutes before they come, their madrich gives me a call. And 5 minutes before they come, I tell myself, I don't like anything I prepared. So what do? I called my father. I said, Dad, what am I supposed to tell these guys? He was like, what do you tell people in this stage in life? So my father told me a few thoughts, but the one central thought, my father told me one thing you got to get them to know. And that is that the Torah is always waiting for them. Wherever they are in life, there's Medrash in Torah, there are the ethics of our fathers. The Torah has many voices. The Torah has many aspects where the Torah is relevant to your life. They have to know that the Torah is always relevant, and wherever they are in life, they could come back. The Torah is waiting for them. And that's one of the messages which you might want to incorporate when you speak about the 4 sons. The Torah is always relevant. Whichever component you feel is most prevalent in your life, I've noticed that many people feel like the Russia is the prevalent part of their life. It's saddening to see, but very often our generation is so hard on themselves that people will tell you, but I'm that. So wait a second, the Torah has what to say to you too. This word says, the Torah spoke to all 4 sons. No one can say there's nothing there for me. That's not true, it doesn't matter where you are in life. Again, it's a vort, it's not pshat, but sometimes it's important for your guests to hear or your children to hear. You have a wise son, a wicked son, a son who is whole or simple, and one who doesn't even know how to ask. Guys, you got the place, page 24. What does the wise son say? So he asks you details. He says, what are the details of the different laws, testimonial statutes that God, our God, commanded you? You got to tell him everything, all the laws of Pesach, everything that's going on here tonight. You got to know, no going out for dessert tonight. One of our rules on the Seder night is that you don't go out for dessert. After eating the Paschal offering, you don't go for afikoman. Now, the word afikoman really means dessert. So we call this piece of matzah afikoman, because this is our dessert. We don't eat dessert after this. But really, the idea is tonight, you got to stick around. You're going to see in life that when your kids come and ask you questions, very often you won't have time. More accurately, almost always you won't have time. And when you have time to talk to them, they're not interested in talking to you. It's just the way life works. Comes the Agada and tells you, tonight, yo with your kid. No walking out. No going to dessert. No going to the neighbors to drink a cup of tea. Tonight you stick around and answer your son everything he wants to know. Rashama Omer, what does a wicked son say? Mavada azot lachim. What's all this work you guys are doing? It's so hard to be a Jew. And why are you guys doing this? Notice how he left himself out. Lachem elolo. The underlying message is you, not me. Being that he kept himself out of the congregation, he's denying the essence here. This is one of the messages of the night. You're a part of a greater people. You're a part of a greater heritage. What are you doing saying it? What are you guys doing this work? It's one thing if a person says, you know, I'm not so observant. Okay, I understand. But he looks at it and says, this is tough. And why do you guys do it? So your answer has to be like, with a little bit of a sharpness to dull what he said and tell him, you tell him, you know, that's why God really took me out of Egypt. You're telling him, yeah, I got out of Egypt. You're indicating to him with that kind of attitude, you wouldn't have made it out of Egypt. You have to realize that one of the core principles that keeps us going throughout the generations is that we see ourselves as one. I want to pause for 1 second and tell you a phenomenal story. There's a genius in this country. Some of you might like him more and some of you might like him less, but no one can argue that he's a genius. His name is Benjamin Netanyahu. And the year was, I think it was about 94. Maybe it was 84. He was standing and lecturing. They asked him to come to an APEC convention in New York. So many wealthy donors who considered themselves unaffiliated. And could you Google for me 1 second? Oh, he's standing there before them. It's the 4th of July weekend, and he tells them, he begins his speech with the following line. He says to them, ladies and gentlemen, I have one question before we begin. Where were all of you on 4th of July 1976? So he's standing there at the speech at a convention of people who consider themselves unaffiliated. And they all look at him for a second, and they all had the same answer. They were all glued to their TV sets because on July 4th, 1976, is when his brother led the raid on the airstrip of Entebbe to free the Jewish hostages from captivity. There were Jews who were taken in, hostage. The flight was landed forcibly in Entebbe. Now, what the genius of what he did there was he was able to tap into that feeling, I'm a part of the Jewish people. People will walk around much of their lives feeling unaffiliated. And suddenly, something will strike them in the gut and they'll say, wait a second, that's my people. What are you doing? When the Rasha speaks, and sometimes in life we see it with ourselves, he's saying, what are they all doing? All this hard stuff, getting up on time for Shachris, and getting a maror, and working to get matzah. We come back and say, wait a second. This is a core point, this idea. I'm a part of this. Don't deny that. Because one who denies that doesn't get out with everyone else either. We're reminding him this is a core issue, being a part of the greater whole. And we're telling him, look, a person who doesn't have that attitude doesn't get out with the greater whole. That's what happened in Egypt. Tama Omer. What does the simple son say? Mazot, what you doing? He doesn't know details. Just something's weird here tonight. What you doing? So you tell the simple son, God took us out of Egypt with a strong hand. So that's, again, how do you tell over the Seder to a child who's 5 years old or 4 years old? You say, there was a bad man in Egypt. And he hit Abba very hard. Those of you who were at my Seder know, what do I do at this point? Anyone? No. This is the point where I take off my belt. I'm serious. You guys think I'm joking. I'm serious. I take off my belt and I start hitting it on the floor like a whip. And I tell the kids, you see, he had a whip like this. And I hit it on the floor and I say, this is how they hit us. If a Jew wasn't working hard enough, they'd hit him again. And they say, get working. What's wrong with you? We want more bricks today. Why are you being so lazy? And as I hit on the floor, you know, it makes a big sound. All the kids are up. Wow, wait. I say, you know how much it hurt to get that on the back? So to the little ones, I say, you know, and they hit Abba, and it hurt. And then Hashem came and said, no hitting Abba. I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim. And that's why we're here today, because Hashem came and took me out of Mitzrayim. And the kid has a big smile, and he's very happy. I did my mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. To the 3-year-old, to the 4-year-old, to the 5-year-old. The 5-year-old could understand more. And the 3 to 4-year-old, okay, that's the story. That's what we just said. The simple son, what do you say? God came and God showed he was boss, he was stronger, and he took us out of Mitzrayim. There, I finished my story. The story doesn't have to be complicated. To the simple son, it's a simple story. Then you have a kid who doesn't even know how to ask. So then you start the conversation with him. That's why you start the conversation with the kid and you tell him, you see what's going on here? You see all of this? You see the matzah? This is what happened in Egypt. You see? Hands-on education. Babuza, you point to things. You tell him we were in Egypt. We roasted the meat. You see, just like that roasted meat, we roasted it. That was a great mitzah. We were very scared of the Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, and still we did it. Okay. Now we have a little bit more instructions. You guys have it? Yachol, bottom of page 24. Yachol, me Rosh Chodesh. You might think it's such a long story. Let me start on Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of the month. Talmud Amar B'Yomahu. So that's why the Torah says, no, on that day tell the story. You might think, okay, let me get started on the day. No. Talmud Amar B'Avuzeh, B'Avuzeh Lo Amar B'Shashi Yesh Matzah Mo'om Unchin Nefanecha. We say, tell the kid because of this. Because of this means you point it. You tell the kid, in my house it works better. We have grated horseradish. We tell him, see how bitter this is, right? Try smelling it. I pass it to the kids and everyone's like, ah, right? Okay. We have bitter horseradish because of this. Because of how much we suffered there in Egypt. This is nothing compared to what we suffered. Here's how Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And here we're now going to go back. Remember we said, what's our central theme? Matchil b'gnutum siyem b'shevach. You start with the shame of our history, and then you'll evolve to the praise of how Hashem saved us. And we're at the top of page 26. Remember, one opinion says we begin with the fact that our great-grandfather was pagan. So how do we do it at my Seder table? Want to pass me that empty bottle, please? Empty bottle of grape juice. That one. Yeah, that's good. Marcel, what you had your hands on?
It's not empty.
Almost empty, fine. So now what we're going to read is Mitchilav Devadaz Rayu Avotenu. Our forefathers used to be pagans. So the kids already know. I say, you know what that means? My great-grandfather used to take something like this and say, save me. Help me. Please. Take an empty bottle, stand there and start downing to the bottle for a minute. And all the kids are laughing and looking at you like, funny. And I say, you think it's funny? But my great-grandfather, that's what he did. Avram's father, Terach, he takes something that was meaningless and he'd dive into it and he'd say, look, I ask my children to clean up before Shabbos. They don't listen. Please, make it that they'll listen. And all the kids are looking at me like, are you crazy, Abba? And I say, no, this is what they did. They dive into stupid things. But the whole world was doing this. You're going to say this. Originally, our forefathers were pagans. Tell that to your kid. It means nothing. Play it out to your kid. Now he starts understanding what you're talking about. No, look at how lucky we are. We go to shul. We daven. Hashem listens. We have the kotel. We have who to talk to. We're talking to Hashem for real. We're not talking to stupid objects. Again, I got to say it on their level. Now God brought us close to His service. Now the verse says, Joshua said to the nation, so says God, way back when your forefathers lived on the other side of the Euphrates, the Terach, who was Abraham's father, and they worshipped other gods. I say to the kids, you know, if a fire broke out, they'd stand and pray to the fire, please don't move, please don't spread, please don't burn our town. They pray to the fire. Does that make sense? So obviously the kids understand. I say, but yeah, Avram's father, Terach, that's what he did. And then God took Avram. Everyone else was worshiping these things. And Avram is called Avram Ivri, which means he stood alone. No one else was doing this. They looked at him and they'd say, you're worshiping a God in heaven? A God we don't see? What's wrong with you, Avram? Ah, that's what we're accounting here. And then Hashem brought him to here, to the land of Canaan. And then God made him many. You know, Avram didn't have any kids. And Hashem blessed him. And then Yitzchak, God gave him Yitzchak. And then Yitzchak to Yaakov and Esav. Yitzchak had Yaakov and Esav. And then Esav to Asir Reshtov. And Yaakov and Avir do Mitzrayimah. Esav received Mount Seir. And Yaakov and his children went down to Egypt. Now here there's a very important pshat I'm going to tell you. You can't tell to your kids when they're younger because it's a little bit deep and complex, but you have to know it. Why do we make mention of all this at the Seder? Why does this matter? Because there's really a central question which we're addressing here. The Seder is addressing the most basic concepts in Jewish philosophy. So one of the basic concepts is we are a chosen people. So Abraham was chosen, fine. Abraham had a son, Yishmael. Okay, Yishmael came from the maid. Not relevant. God says, Kivi Yitzhak Yikrel Chazara. I've chosen Isaac. But wait a second, Isaac had twin sons, Esav and Yaakov. So who's to say we're the chosen ones? Maybe it's the Russians. Maybe that's why Putin is expanding his territory. Who's to know? Wait a second. Maybe he's the chosen people. How do you know? Esav and Yaakov, they're both twin grandchildren of Avram. What we're telling the kid tonight is we're saying, look, it all began when God made a covenant with Abraham and said, your descendants will have to deal with a servitude in a foreign land. That's what happened in Egypt. When we fulfilled that, we were proving that we were the chosen people because Esav did not do that. So if God is saying your descendants who will have the land of Israel will first have to endure 400 years in servitude. So we endured that. So what we're discussing tonight is also our right to the land of Israel. Our right to the title as the chosen people. If Esav comes along, one of the Christian claims is, who says you're the chosen ones? We're the chosen ones. The Muslims claims we erase things from the Tanakh. Happens to be there's no logical basis for the claim, but it doesn't matter. I'm saying if you study history, if you look at the Septuagint, you look at other sources, you see even sources that are irrelevant to the Jewish people back our tradition of how the Tanakh should be written. And our Tanakh, we have copies that predate Islam. all over the world. So it's like a little bit of a ridiculous claim, but that doesn't matter. What's our answer to Esav philosophically? Well, how do I know I'm chosen and not Esav? The answer is, that was the covenant. So what I'm telling the kid tonight about me being in Egypt, coming out of Egypt, I'm also explaining to him, this is part of the proof that we are the chosen people. This was part of the covenant in Brit Ben Abtarim. You guys have page 26. We're about to hit the Vehisham Dason. Blessed is he who kept his promise to Israel. Now this philosophically, again, I'll give you depth which most kids are not ready to hear. Why does God have to keep his promise? He could stop the world. He could erase the past. He controls everything. So that's our blessing here. Blessed is he who keeps his promise. Imagine, God's making you a promise. Yeah, but he can make you forget the promise. He controls everything. So what's binding him to his promise? That's blessed is he who does. Baruch Hu, blessed is he. Shakadosh Baruch Hu Chishev Taketz. God was very careful in calculating when the 400 years should end. Lasot kmo shamar Avraham Avinu bivrit ben Abtarim, to fulfill what he told Abraham in the covenant. Shneimar v'yomer Avraham yodot edak yezachah be'etz lo'olam v'avdu minyut ha'mamot shana v'gam tgoy she'yavod anochi v'achrechen yitzu b'chush gadol. The verses say over there in the covenant of Brit ben Abtarim, God tells Abraham, I want you to know your children will be sojourners in a land that's not theirs. They will have to work, they will be afflicted, and this will last for 400 years. Ultimately, I will judge the nation, and they will come out with great wealth. How did it? But it was 210 years. What does that mean, 400 years? So one interpretation says, because the Egyptians made us work day and night, so God said, okay, I'll count it as though you fulfilled the timing within that, because you worked double. Another understanding says, because they made us work doubly hard, it was abnormal how hard they made us work. And a third interpretation says that God said a decree, the way we often say, when God makes a decree, he does not define how it will play itself out. That's up to our behavior. So God says, 400 years your children will be strangers in a land, and they will be afflicted. Did God say the affliction will take place 400 years, or strangers in a land will take place 400 years? That's open for interpretation. So from the time Isaac was born, Abraham had a descendant who was a stranger in the land. And then God chose that interpretation to finish the 400 years because he saw we wouldn't last beyond that. And that's what we're saying here, that God calculated when the redemption should end. God calculated et ha-ketz. He calculated which day to fulfill the word he pledged to Avram. And that's one interpretation in the calculation. And that's what we say, that it was 400 years from when Yitzhak was born till we left Egypt. Yitzhak was born in the year 2048, and we left Egypt in the year 2448. Yes?
Okay.